Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the foreign service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on RAE.com.ar. My name is Fernando Farias, and I'm going to be bringing you this show in English for Friday, January 24, 2025. We're going to have news, and we're going to have part three of documentary Dear Buenos Aires on the sightseeing activities you can do in Buenos Aires. A piece that you can check out on YouTube in its entirety. It's called, as I said, Dear Buenos Aires. We also have some content on tango and its history, and particularly the dance and the African roots of this very important musical genre and cultural feature of Argentina. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send an email to qslrai@gmail.com or a letter to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. Either way is okay for sending reception reports if you are a DXer. This show is aired via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on RAE.com.ar, our webpage, and also you can download our app for mobile devices that you can get for free. It's available for both Android and Apple phones. It's called Digital RAE, and that will allow you to listen to our station on your cell phone. Okay, folks, we are now ready to get started with the news. These are the headlines. President Milei's speech at the Davos Forum sparks opposition criticism. IMF delegation arrives in Buenos Aires to negotiate a new deal. Colombian government launches military operations against the ELN due to the violence ongoing in Catatumbo. Concerns grow over a massive iceberg heading toward South Georgia Island. Four Argentine sandwiches are ranked among the world's best according to Taste Atlas. And these are the news. Argentine President Javier Milei condemned what he described as a woke or leftist ideology during his speech at the Davos Economic Forum in Switzerland. He criticized environmentalism, abortion, feminism, LGBT rights, and diversity policies, claiming they are tools for increasing state intervention. Mr. Milei warned that Western civilization is in danger due to the spread of leftist ideas and controversially linked gender ideology to pedophilia. Opposition figures strongly criticized his statements. Coalition Civica leader Maximiliano Ferraro argued that such remarks are inappropriate for international forums and called them baseless. Lawmaker Margarita Stolbizer, in turn, compared his views to those of the Iranian regime, while Senator Anabel Fernández Agasti accused the president of attempting to reverse societal progress by a century. In other news, an International Monetary Fund mission arrived in Buenos Aires to negotiate a potential new agreement with Argentina. Media reports suggest the IMF is considering an $11 billion loan to boost the country's central bank's reserves. The delegation, led by IMF official Luis Cubedu, is meeting with Argentine Economy Minister Luis Caputo. Local outlets report that the IMF wants Argentina to lift foreign currency restrictions, but Caputo clarified that there is no deadline to eliminate currency controls. The Colombian government announced military operations against the ELN, the National Liberation Army guerrilla group, following escalating violence in the Catatumbo region. Interior Minister Juan Fernando Cristo cited clashes between the ELN and ex-FARC dissidents over territorial control. More than 100 people have died and nearly 40,000 have been displaced due to the fighting. The crisis has led to the abrupt suspension of peace talks with the ELN, undermining President Gustavo Petro's efforts to negotiate a deal similar to the one signed in 2016 with the now-dissolved FARC. A giant iceberg known as A23A is now drifting towards South Georgia Island, raising ecological concerns. This ice block, measuring 3,500 square kilometers, broke off from Antarctica and is now less than 300 kilometers from the British-controlled island, whose sovereignty is also claimed by Argentina. Scientists warn that if the iceberg grounds and fragments, it could disrupt food supplies for local wildlife, endangering thousands of penguins and seals. The iceberg's movements are being closely monitored by scientists, sailors, and fishermen. And four Argentine sandwiches have been ranked among the world's top 50 by the renowned website Taste Atlas. Leading the pack is the Lomo sandwich, ranked 11th with a score of 4.4 out of 5. Described as an extreme version of a steak sandwich, it features a sliced beef tenderloin, tomatoes, onions, lettuce, and mayonnaise, chimichurri sauce, ham, cheese, and even a fried egg on top. Other Argentine sandwiches on the list include the choripan or sausage sandwich, number 23, the milanesa or the breaded steak sandwich, 31, and the bondiola or pork steak sandwich, also known as bondi pan, is number 35th in this ranking issued by Taste Atlas. And these were the news on RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior.
The always crowded Florida Street ends in one of the most beautiful green places in the city, Plaza San Martin, located in an area with a history so rich as varied. There stood the residence of a governor during the colonial period. The place was afterwards occupied by barracks where slaves, introduced by the British slave trader South Sea Company, were kept. It was the site of the most important bullring Buenos Aires ever had, and the location of important military headquarters. During the British invasion of 1807, it witnessed combats leaving hundreds of victims, and on that very place, General José de San Martín formed and trained the Regiment of Grenadiers on horseback, of memorable performance during the Independence Wars. On the square, there is a 170-ton monument made of bronze and red granite, with which Argentina pays tribute to her liberator as well as to the independence armies. The equestrian statue representing a 35-year-old San Martin, indicating with his right hand the route across the Andes, is the work of the French artist José Luis Dumas and was inaugurated in 1862. The allegoric groups and reliefs by the German artist Gustavo Eberlein represent the main battles of the independence, the crossing of the Andes, and other events of the liberation campaign. They were added almost half a century later. The monument, of great aesthetic value and historical significance, is the ideal venue for homage ceremonies to honor the nation's father, José de San Martín. The other important memorial on the square, located in the sector that slopes down towards Retiro, is the monument to the soldiers who died during the War of the Malvinas in 1982. Their names are engraved on a wide stone frieze. Although in the surroundings of San Martin Square, the bustle has continued to increase, it has remained a peaceful site. Paths and benches are under the shade of old trees, including magnolias, palm trees, a pair of colossal rubber plants, and numerous Argentine species, which in spring cover the area with pink and lilac-colored flowers. Around that green oasis stand some of the most elegant and traditional buildings in the city. Among them, the San Martin Palace, headquarters of the Chancellery, the old residence of the Aedo family, now the site of the National Parks Administration, the Marriott Plaza Hotel, the Holy Sacrament Basilica, with its five towers, and the Paz Family Palace, present site of the Military Circle and the Nation's Arms Museum. In spite of their importance, none of those buildings attracts our attention so much as the Kavanaugh, built in 1934 and 110 meters high, the Kavanaugh was for a long time the highest building in South America. Its constructive features, as well as its design, have won important international awards. Its triangular form makes it emerge like a gigantic bow, facing the neighboring Retiro Square, with the Torre de los Ingleses and a group of railway terminals crowded by people and vehicles. The vicinity to the river provides Buenos Aires with high environmental humidity, constant conversation for the porteños, a name given to the inhabitants of the city due to their origin, history, and economy, closely linked to its large port. Most of the foreign trade of Argentina passes through the port of Buenos Aires, but the old installations known as Puerto Madero were separated from port activity, giving birth to an urban area which has acquired an extraordinary commercial, financial, and tourist significance. The attractive red brick buildings were constructed between 1900 and 1905. Tons of wheat, leather, and other local products were stored there, and all kinds of imported goods were kept in storage, being moved by cranes built into the walls. Stones in the foundations and iron beams in floors and walls resulted in structures capable of bearing gigantic loads. During the 90s, the 16 docks were recycled and incorporated to the city as a new neighborhood. The trees, the river, the harmonious buildings, and the neatness of paths and small squares invite to walk around the area, which offers one of the most attractive profiles in the urban horizon. The old warehouses accommodate today almost 50 cafes, tea shops, and first-class restaurants. Also, offices of large companies, commercial representatives, cinemas, art exhibition rooms, and even one of the most important private universities in the country. Businessmen and tourists are habitual pedestrians. And on weekends, the area is also visited by thousands of porteños who love to eat well and walk by the river. Two historic ships converted into museums, the frigate Sarmiento and the corvette Uruguay, raised their masts and yards at the docks, offering the possibility of visiting them to get in touch with the life aboard a large war sailing vessel. Next to Puerto Madero and its docks lies the vast tapestry of the ecological reserve. It is a genuine example of the flora that covered the coast of the River Plate in times of the conquest and constitutes an exceptional place to observe the wild fauna. It was formed a little more than two decades ago on the massive debris from demolitions and excavations which was deposited in that sector. The periodical overflows of the river spontaneously colonized the area with aquatic plants and seeds of riverside plants from other latitudes. First appeared the rush thickets and underbrushes. Then trees and bushes grew, which lodged many species of birds. There are large pastures and dense groups of alders and willows, alternating with lagoons and marshlands inhabited by otters and other aquatic animals. There are 350 hectares for riding on bicycle or rambling along predetermined paths, by yourself or on a guided tour. No other great city in the world has such a showing of flora and fauna so near the urban heart. Public access to the ecological reserve is located at the beginning of the Southern Riverside Strip, a promenade with renewed gardens and boulevards that constitute an interesting framework for statues and sculptures. But none of them is so attractive as the fountain which Lola Mora, the first Argentine sculptress, created out of marble with a chisel, a hammer, and the strength of her exceptional talent. The whole group, imposing in its snow whiteness, exhibits the harmonious proportions created by a sensitive spirit, complemented by a faultless technique. There is Venus, the goddess of love, of beauty and the seas, crowning with her nudity the group formed by two mermaids and three tritons, holding the reins of bolting colts due to the upsurge of the goddess from the depths of the sea. The fountain was relocated at the site in 1918. Since 1903, it had irradiated its beauty in the surroundings of the Casa del Gobierno, but had to be moved due to the opposition aroused by the naked figure. Its official name is Fountain of the Nereids, but the people, whose opinion was requested by the sculptor when the fountain was the center of the scandal, preferred to give it the name of its creator. It is, for all porteños, La Fuente de Lola Mora. More than 1,100 monuments and sculptural works embellish the streets, walkways, and open areas of Buenos Aires. Some are full of historical significance, and others have an artistic value recognized worldwide. But the symbol of the city is a pure-lined work of construction, the Obelisco. It was built in 1936 to celebrate the 400th anniversary of the port founded by Pedro de Mendoza. And it is also a memorial of the day the national flag was raised there for the first time, on the tower of the already demolished Church of St. Nicholas. The 67-meter-high monument stands on the exact crossing of Avenues Nueve de Julio, Corrientes, and Diagonal Julio Arroca, in the middle of six lanes of intensive traffic. The grass surrounding it has the shields of all the Argentine provinces, together with a large sitting area that form the Plaza de la República. Designed by architect Alfredo Previch, the building is hollow, with a staircase leading to a pyramidal apex where four little windows spy upon the cardinal points of the city. At a time the Obelisco was criticized and was even on the verge of being demolished, without moving from the Plaza de la República, it invaded pictures and postcards, placed its Egyptian form in the heart of the porteños, and became the symbol of Buenos Aires worldwide. The unmistakable profile of the Obelisco dominates the perspective of two key avenues in the city. One is Corrientes, synonym of shows due to the dominant presence of cinemas and theaters. There are restaurants, pizzerias, cafes, bookstores, and places where cultural activities abound. It is the ideal avenue for those who enjoy to walk casually without haste, to philosophize in a cafe over a cup of coffee, or to stop here and there to observe whatever calls the visitor's attention. And it is one of the areas most frequented by theater actors and theater goers. There are literature, music, and art classes, or dance courses in the area. Nueve de Julio Avenue stands out like Corrientes, but satisfies other needs. 140 meters wide and 3 kilometers long, its opening originated a categorical split in urban traffic, changing dozens of city blocks to facilitate the access and circulation of vehicles in the downtown area. It connects railway terminals, highways, and wide avenues, and enhances its appearance with small squares, trees, and several fountains of remarkable beauty. To the south, it is bordered by the landscape of old neighborhoods, acquiring then the metropolitan features of the downtown area, and on the north end receives the aristocratic aspect of top-level residences and buildings. The flowers of its trees constitute one of the best gifts offered by the city center. With the exception of some charming hills near the coast, Buenos Aires does not have mountains, valleys, or other unusual geographical features. It grew on the plain, and its beauty is therefore the result of human efforts, which adorned it with statues, designed beautiful parks and squares, opened avenues, raised towers, and built palace residences, achieving the features that offer many pleasant surprises. Such is the case of the Robos clocks, which from towers and facades have marked the passing of time for decades and are today a luxurious adornment. Although many have already disappeared, Buenos Aires is among the cities where more clocks have embellished the city's buildings. The tallest is the tower clock of the city legislature, located 94 meters above ground level. Situated near Plaza de Mayo, it dominates the historical heart of the city with the majesty of a lighthouse, and the tolling of its five bells has marked the official hour of Buenos Aires for the last 70 years. A close relative stands on Plaza del Retiro, decorating the Torre de los Ingleses, English People's Tower, so called because it was a gift from British residents to Argentina on the 100th anniversary of its independence. The monumental clock, which has four fronts, is located 50 meters from the ground and weighs 20 tons, constituting the main attraction for visitors. However, the most intricate public clock of the city is at the crossing of Corrientes and San Martin. Its hands mark the hours, but the dial indicates the seasons of the year, the months they cover, and the period corresponding to each sign of the zodiac. Maybe this astral invocation saved it from being destroyed by bullets during the revolution that overthrew President Perón in September 1955. But the oldest among the dozens of clocks of this type comes from 1740 and crowns the bell tower of the Basilica Nuestra Señora del Pilar. It has a curious design, with curved hands that move on a spherical dial and command the striking of hours on two bells. This relic is one of the attractions of Recoleta, the area where Buenos Aires has concentrated most of its charming elements: history, parks, monuments, restaurants, and cultural activity.
I touch your lips and all at once.
Recoleta is a neighborhood that owes its name to a modest convent from colonial times where the Franciscan monks practiced seclusion and meditation. It was an isolated place that became crowded with top-level residences starting in 1870, when a great epidemic of yellow fever forced the movement of the wealthiest population towards the north of the city. The ancient convent and the nearby Basilica del Pilar, both restored, constitute at present the core of an exceptional tour. The colonial-style church, tower, and belfry contains important pieces of Indo-American religious art. And in the cells, which once were used as an asylum for old people and beggars, now functions as the Recoleta Cultural Center, where contemporary and exceptional art exhibitions take place. Next to it is the Buenos Aires Design Center, a very modern mall dedicated mainly to the exhibition and sale of furniture and interior decoration objects. It also has traditional as well as quick food restaurants. In the neighborhood, there are jewelry stores, international boutiques, high fashion houses, and other sophisticated shops. In front of the square, there are more than 20 restaurants and cafes. And two blocks away, there is a cinema complex, complemented by music and bookstores and snack bars. All this surrounded by elegant residences, gardens, enormous gum trees, and one of the most remarkable concentration of monuments and statues in the city. The movement is constant, night and day, although it reaches its peak during weekends, when musicians, dancers, mime artists, jugglers, and other street artists perform on the various squares. On Sundays, there is an artisan's fair with a vast offer of ceramics, leather, fabrics, wood, glass, and metal objects. The greenness of Recoleta continues with other open areas towards the river. One of them lies around the mythical Palais de Glass, which was conceived as a skating rink, then a dancing hall and cabaret, where the tango was accepted by distinguished people. And today, it is the National Plastic Arts Hall. A few meters from the Palais de Glass stands the paramount work of a genius of sculpture, the monument to General Carlos Maria de Alvear, masterpiece by the French Antoine Bourdelle. Alvear, who had a decisive participation in the independence period and in the first years of Argentina, is represented by a figure on horseback, which crowns a 13-meter-high block made of granite. On the corners of the pedestal, four statues represent the features of the hero: eloquence, freedom, strength, and victory. The group is a masterpiece because of its sobriety and harmony of proportion. The horse is considered one of the best achieved in the world, the result of a preparation that made Bourdelle produce more than 50 sculptures for study before melting the final work. When the masterpiece was exhibited in Paris, just before being sent to Argentina, France was on the verge of forbidding its departure. It dominates the surrounding garden, and its quietness contrasts with the hectic traffic of Avenida Libertador. Many consider it the monument of the highest artistic value in the city. From Recoleta to the north, Buenos Aires proudly shows its largest green area, the Palermo Woods. These lands used to be frequently flooded by the river until Governor Juan Manuel de Rosas ordered their cleaning and built his residence in 1938. The present aspect, however, is due to landscape architect Carlos Thays, who between 1891 and 1914 designed and directed the construction of this exceptional park. Thousands of trees are grouped according to size, color of leaves, and blossom season, so that the best possible view is offered the whole year. Woods vary with lakes and green areas, with pergolas, footbridges, fountains, benches, and old lamps. The design of some sectors create a unique profile, such as the Rosedal, where thousands of flowers border paths, garden beds, fountains, arbors, and lamps, distributed according to French, Italian, and Spanish styles. However, the subtle Oriental aesthetics reign absolutely in the Japanese garden. There, the plants grow among water surfaces and islands connected by small wooden bridges. One of the principal attractions of Palermo is the zoological garden, where the animals attract almost as much interest as the houses of the beasts of prey, designed according to the style of the regions where the animals come from. Next door, there is the quietness of the botanical garden, where species from all parts of the world flourish, alternating with the beauty of the numerous statues. Another important attraction is the Galileo Galilei Planetary, whose singular architecture accurately reveals its purpose: to put the sky at the reach of visitors, showing astronomy and the mysteries of celestial space. The perspectives and harmony of the landscape have favored the location of sculptures, amongst them one in honor of President and educator Domingo Faustino Sarmiento by Auguste Rodin. Another is in memory of Justo José de Urquiza, who enabled the final organization of the country after a long period of division and civil struggles. But the most imposing memorial of the city is on the crossing of Avenues del Libertador and Sarmiento. It is the work of the Catalan artist Agustín Querol, made at request of Spaniards residing in Argentina. They gave it as a present to Argentina on the first century of its independence. For that reason, it is called the Monument of the Spaniard. A large foliated fountain where two groups of nymphs enjoy the fresh touch of water forms the base. On the corners, four colossal bronze figures represent the Andes, the River Plate, the Chaco, and the Pampa. The majority of the 97 creatures integrating the group form friezes and low reliefs on the white central column. They seem to blend one with the other, scarcely covered by gowns, softening their contour as if waved by a breeze. A winged figure symbolizes the language, and from the top of the monument, the Republic, with open arms and the tunic waving in the wind, dominates the wide horizon of the Palermo Woods. The sports originated in Palermo Woods, as reminded to us by a monolith located nearby the planetarium. Sports extended then to the rest of the city, but Palermo continues to be a paradise for sportsmen. Surrounded by green parks, public and private facilities have numerous sports activities, such as cycling, athletics, tennis, and golf. Even mountain climbers practice their climbing techniques on high stone walls. Beyond what can be seen in Palermo, sports occupy a very important place in the life of Porteños, not because all inhabitants practice sports, but because of the enormous interest with which they follow the events. Tennis tournaments convoke thousands of people, and car racing gathers multitudes, but none can compare to the enthusiasm aroused by soccer. Championships and competitions follow one another during the year. This explains the great number of world-renowned players who have grown up in Argentina. Buenos Aires has 8 first-rate division clubs, representing the highest density in the world, and similar institutions located in the neighboring metropolitan region complete the list. The main soccer clubs, according to numbers of fans and size of their stadiums, are Boca Juniors and River Plate, whose legendary rivalry is overshadowed only when the Argentine selection plays the international matches. As wisely indicated by an old expression, in the Argentine capital, soccer constitutes a passion of multitudes. Cosmopolitan by formation and by choice, Buenos Aires is the exclusive work of human effort. It is not crossed by crystalline rivers. It does not face a roaring sea from the height of tall cliffs. It is neither surrounded by rainforest nor at the feet of mountain. It was created on a plain next to an estuary of murky waters. It created a music which accurately expresses its cosmopolitan spirit. And its beauty is the result of the perseverance and tenacity of its inhabitants. Sports stadiums, parks, museums, monuments, concert halls, art galleries, promenades, and shopping centers make it charming. To the captivating features of its buildings, it adds a vast gastronomy, a large number of shows, and a condition of springboard to reach any part of the Argentine geography. And in case something was missing, there is the hospitality of the Porteños, an attribute that any visitor can immediately verify. Buenos Aires appeals to the heart.
Stories about the origins and development of tango. The favorite history of tango is that it started in the suburbs of the melting pot of Buenos Aires, Argentina. Tango is a dance, a music, and a poetry that originated in Buenos Aires at the turn of the century, about 1900. European and South American immigrants all brought their native music and dances with them. One of the earliest tangos was written around 1905 by Ángel Vilaldo. It was El Choclo, one tune almost everyone recognizes as tango. The word tango was used at the time to describe the various music and dances of the area. Buenos Aires was a very poor city with penniless immigrants coming to make their fortunes on the plains of Argentina and Uruguay. Those who failed ended up in the cities. Most of the immigrants were single men with nothing to their name but their macho pride, hoping to earn enough to return to Europe or to buy a bride from Europe. A poor, desperate male population bred crime, brothels, gangsters, and tango. With few women around, tango moved to where women could be found, the brothels. The women there could choose their clients by their dancing skill. The man had three dances to prove himself. With few women around, men learned together. It was not uncommon for men to dance with men, practicing their skills. This dance and music was popularized and moved up the social scale where it was embraced by the sons of the rich who were sent to Europe to study or do a grand tour. By 1910, the rich sons of Argentina made their way to Paris, where society was eager for innovation and not adverse to the risque nature of tango. Polite society in Paris saw the dance and fell in love, which let loose a tango mania. 1913 was the year of the tango, and tango became an international phenomenon. As it was now fashionable in Paris, the upper class of Argentina embraced it, and Hollywood glamorized the tango, with Rudolph Valentino as its most famous tango gaucho. Films, lyrics, and music developed and recordings were made. By the end of the First World War, Argentina was one of the richest countries in the world. Some of the most renowned tango recording artists of this early time included Carlos Gardel, who sang the tango stories of abandoned lovers, which became the story of tango. Notable dancers during this period included Petrolio, or Carlos Estevez, who got his nickname by being so slick on the dance floor. He would bend low at the knees, and his footwork was characteristically fast. Others included Gerardo Portales, José Vázquez, Luis Lemos, Miguel Balmaceda, and Ramón Rivera. By 1930, however, tango was out of fashion in Europe, and a military coup in Argentina suppressed and censored tango for 10 years. But tango flourished again in the 1940s, which developed into the golden age of tango. Tango came to be a fundamental expression of Argentine culture, and it was championed by the national political movement of Juan and Eva Perón, beginning in 1946. Tango changed with political and economic conditions, as evidenced in the music. In poor economic times, the large dance salons closed, giving way to the once popular smaller venues. Orchestras, too, became smaller again, and by the end of the 1950s, tango was again out of fashion. The arrival of American swing and rock and roll had taken over. Tango is really a passion play, and a tango dance ends quite often with a falling woman. In fact, the falling woman has become the popular icon of tango. It is the melodramatic portrayal of a fallen woman. Stories of tango can be about the lives of women who are fallen according to the morality of their societies. A great part of tango speaks of women who leave a man, often poor, for another man, in general of higher class. And El Guapo takes revenge by killing the woman. According to the universal codes of love and betrayal, she must be thrown away. Tango's current popularity began in the 1980s when a popular stage show, Tango Argentino, toured the world, starring such dancers as Juan Carlos Copes and Maria Nieves. The newest surge in popularity began in 1990 with an explosion around the world. Most people see tango primarily as a dance, but getting to know and understand the music is part of knowing tango. The classic tango orchestra is made up of bandoneons, violins, piano, and string bass. The guitar is also a commonly included instrument, especially when a singer is present. The bandoneon is the key to the tango sound. It is a large, rather complicated concertina, originally developed in Germany for churches that could not afford organs. The bandoneon is a rather complex instrument because most of the buttons produce a different note when played pushing in rather than pulling them out. Also, since the bandoneon is asymmetrical, the right and left-hand keyboards are different. It means that four different keyboard layouts must be learned. The bandoneon has become almost the symbol of tango. As the music developed, it became less rigidly rhythmic, more harmonic and melodic. Some people see tango as primarily a dance, a connection between two people in a beautiful pas de deux. Most will say, however, that tango is the music, the lyrics, and the dancer's interpretation of the music and the sentiments it expresses. Argentine tango music is much more varied than ballroom tango music. While Argentine tango dancing has historically been danced to tango music, in the 1990s, a younger generation of tango dancers began dancing tango steps to alternatives to tango music. In the 21st century, the new generation of musicians is mixing tango with contemporary music styles. This has been branded Tango Nuevo. Argentine tango is danced in an embrace that can vary from very open, in which the leader and follower connect at arm's length, to very closed, in which the connection is chest to chest, or anywhere in between. Three things happen as the tango dance begins. First, the man signals through his body that the first step is about to begin. Second, the lady responds with a move backwards, acknowledging her awareness of the move and making room for the man by starting a step backward. And third, the man senses the response of the lady and begins his first step forward. Tango dance is essentially walking with a partner in the music. Dancing appropriately to the emotion and speed of a tango is extremely important to dancing tango. A good dancer is one who transmits a feeling of the music to the partner, leading them effectively throughout the dance. Also, dancers generally keep their feet close to the floor as they walk, the ankles and knees brushing as one leg passes the other. Argentine tango is danced counterclockwise around the outside of the dance floor. A striking difference between Argentine tango and ballroom tango is in the shape and feel of the embrace. Ballroom technique dictates that the partners arch their upper bodies away from each other while maintaining contact at the hip. In Argentine tango, it is the opposite. The dancers' chests are closer to each other than are their hips. One very important characteristic of Argentine tango is the walk outside of the legs of the follower. This inside walk belongs originally to the American tango. It is seen in Argentine tango, but it does not belong to it originally. Argentine tango is not a set step, but a completely improvised dance comprised of various elements. Some elements include caminar or walk, cruce, cross, ochos, figure eight, ganchos, leg hooks, giros, turns, contragiros, turns in the other direction, sacadas, displacements, boleos, llevadas de pie, moving foot by foot, cortes, cuts, and quebradas, breaks. Argentine tango developed a set of codes and superstitions throughout its history. One example is cabaceo, an eye invitation by a man to a woman to dance, which is practiced in Buenos Aires. The man raises an eyebrow or both. The woman accepts by smiling or nodding agreement. If the woman is not available or not interested, she averts her eyes as though she didn't see. Tango music is played in sets of three or four dances called tandas, and it is expected that one will dance the entire tanda with one's partner. Between tandas, a cortina is played. It is a short piece, about 30 seconds, and not tango music, to let the dancers know that the tanda is over. One tango superstition is that one does not dance to the well-known tango, Adios Muchachos, as it is believed to be the last song sung by Carlos Gardel before his death. There is nothing more tango than nylons. Sexy nylons lengthen the leg and are super soft to the touch. Also worn is fishnet stockings, almost a tango trademark. When tango was born, it was customary that women wore long skirts. As time went by, however, women began making openings in their skirts and dresses in order to have a wider range of motion. Today, it is customary to wear all lengths of skirts as long as movement is not impeded. Women tango dancers wear long skirts or dresses with long slits or really short skirts or dresses, usually with asymmetrical hemlines adorned with fringes and crocheted applications. The tops normally show cleavage and are very sensual. Accessories can be worn on special occasions or for shows. This includes flowers made from fabric or feathers attached to the hair or legs. Tango shoes for women sport high heels with plenty of support and two straps, one from around the ankle and the other up the middle of the foot. For the men, a typical outfit is a silk shirt and straight-cut trousers. The man never wears cuff trousers, as it is too easy for a stiletto heel to get caught. The man can also wear suspenders, vests, and hats, all contributing to the tango image. Although the 1930s and 40s are often referred to as the golden age of tango, many see the modern resurgence as the new golden age of tango. As with tango itself, or how one interprets tango and its origins, when two people step into the embrace, a truly sensual experience begins, as tango is not just a dance.
Most of us are familiar with the beautiful and elegant and passionate dance called the Argentine Tango. We've seen it performed countless times on TV shows such as So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars, as well as any number of major motion pictures. Most of you probably know that the dance comes from the South American country of Argentina. There are probably some amongst you who already know that it began around the outskirts of Argentina's capital city, Buenos Aires, sometime in the late 1800s. Those of you who have studied a bit of dance history also probably recognize that the original tango evolved from dances that were not only danced locally, but were brought to Argentina from Europe by its growing immigrant population. But how many of you know that the major original influences on Argentine tango are actually African? If you do not know this, you aren't alone. Think about it for a moment. Of all the images you can recollect from every TV show, motion picture, video clip, or photograph you've ever seen featuring the tango, how many times have you actually seen it danced by a black dancer? Now, I don't say this to suggest that it's a bad thing. Far from it. This is how dances evolve. A dance may begin in one community, but as it grows in popularity, it will take on elements of other communities. We've seen this historically in the United States with dances like the Cakewalk, the Charleston, and the Lindy Hop. And we're seeing it even today with the evolution of hip-hop. Our goal here is to simply point out some history that many of you may not be aware of. And so begins my brief history of the black roots of Argentine tango. The Atlantic slave trade, also known as the transatlantic slave trade, refers to the trade in slaves that took place across the Atlantic Ocean from the 16th through the 19th centuries. The vast majority of slaves involved in the Atlantic trade were African from the central and western parts of the continent, who were sold by African slave dealers to European traders who transported them to the colonies in North and South America. There, the slaves were made to labor on coffee, coca, and cotton plantations, in gold and silver mines, in rice fields, the construction industry, timber, and shipping, or in houses to work as servants. More than two-thirds of the slaves who ended up in South America came from the eastern and equatorial region of Africa called Bantu, and a great many of these slaves ended up in the Rio Plata regions of Uruguay and Argentina. There is a single word that has survived through time that fuses all the drum-based black dance and music from that area and era. It is Condombe. These Bantu slaves called their drums tango, and also used this term for the name of the place that they performed the condombe. The dances themselves were also called tangos. During the first half of the 19th century, condombe was a dance typically performed to a group of drummers in large outdoor gatherings of African Argentines who lived mostly in the impoverished barrios in the southern part of the city of Buenos Aires at that time. Candombe represented a fusion of musical and dance traditions from the various parts of Africa from which blacks were brought to that region as slaves. Dancers danced separately with no or occasional minimal contact. It is theorized that the dance we now call tango was born in African Argentine dance venues attended by compadritos, young men mostly native-born and poor, who liked to dress in slouch hats, loosely tied neckerchiefs, and high-heeled boots with knives tucked into their belts. The compadritos took the tango back to the working-class districts of Buenos Aires and introduced it in various low-life establishments where dancing took place. Bars, dance halls, and brothels. It was here that the African rhythms met the Argentine milonga music, a fast-paced polka, and soon new steps began to evolve. Eventually, all of Buenos Aires found out about the tango, and by the beginning of the 20th century, the tango, as both a dance and form of popular music, had established a firm foothold in the fast-expanding city of its birth. It is important to note that the tango danced in Buenos Aires at the beginning of the 20th century is not the tango we see today, not even close. Keñique is the term often used to describe the first dance recognized as tango. Keñique first appeared in the slums and at the outskirts of Buenos Aires around the turn of the 20th century and is considered to have lost its popularity by the late 1930s when tango de salón primarily replaced it as the predominant manner of social tango dancing. There are no historical recordings of Keñique dancing, and there has been no one who danced this style in the 1930s who has been able to demonstrate it since the tango renaissance of the mid-1980s. Thus, all that exists to allow reconstruction of the characteristics of Kanyenkwe are oral history, some photographs, and vague recollections from childhood of how some adult members of the family danced tango. Nevertheless, despite this, there is a considerable degree of agreement among those attempting to revive this historical tango style as to what characteristics define Kanyenkwe. From the 1930s to the present, the Kanyenkwe style of tango virtually disappeared, and tango evolved into a dance walked with a straight posture and little vertical movement. This was the predominant stylistic variation of the Golden Age Tango de Ceylon, which mostly is due to the influence of the French and other Europeans after the dance was brought from Argentina to Paris in the early 1900s. However, some movements of candombe transmitted through Kanyenkwe survived in the milonga of some dancers. The stumble step characteristic of milonga danced to both primary and secondary accented beats, i.e. milonga contra pise, retained some of the rhythmic play inherited from the culture of African Argentines. There also appeared in some milonga music composed and performed during this period a more emphatic variation in rhythmic characteristics of the drums. The music and movements of African Argentine candombe have been represented in tango, particularly in Kanyenkwe, or more specifically, mostly currently in the dance and music of milonga. Nevertheless, there is an evident African Argentine influence upon the evolution of the tango dance and music.
And with this, we come to the end of today's edition of RAE Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior in English for Friday, January 24, 2025. My name is Fernando Farias. We appreciate your listenership. Thank you very much for following us. And we wish that you have an excellent weekend. Let's stay in touch and join us for a new show of RAE soon. Ciao.